Hi, my name is David Brown, and I'm joined by Rebecca Wheeler, and welcome to our Heinemann podcast on the topic of code switching.
Hello, David.
Hi, Rebecca. And before we begin our conversation, I'd just like to do some brief introductions. Rebecca Wheeler is an expert on teaching standard English in dialectically diverse classrooms. She shows teachers how to build on what students know, community English, as they add standard English to their linguistic repertoires. Wheeler is the author of the book Code Switching, Teaching Standard English in Urban Classrooms, published by the National Council of Teachers of English in 2006. She and her co-author, Rebecca Swords, are currently at work on a manuscript for Heinemann. Their forthcoming book will appear in Heinemann's first-hand curriculum series in 2010. A professor in teacher education at Christopher Newport University in Newport News, Virginia, Wheeler has consulted for public schools K through 14 from New York to New Orleans and from Chicago to Baltimore. She has presented her work at Harvard University and before the United Federations of Teachers and the American Federation of Teachers. Most recently, Rebecca Wheeler published Becoming Adept at Code Switching in April 2008 in Educational Leadership with the Association for Supervision and Curriculum Development. Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, David. And now, in turn, let me introduce David. David West Brown is the author of, in other words, Lessons on Grammar, Code Switching, and Academic Language, published by Heinemann in 2009. He was a high school English teacher in Washington State and currently teaches composition at the University of Michigan, where he earned his doctorate. In addition to his book, he has also authored numerous articles on English linguistics. David, your book is wonderful.
Thank you so much.
Quite a treat for the field. Let me start off with a first question about code switching, a basic one. What is it? What is code switching?
Well, code switching as a term began as describing speakers who are fluent in multiple languages and moving between two languages like English and Spanish. And so those speakers were said to be switching codes. In the last several decades, the term has become broadened to include switching between varieties of one language. So a speaker who is able to move between, say, Appalachian English and standard edited English. And just as an example of what code switching looks like, I'd like to just read a brief passage from Toni Morrison's Sua. And this passage describes an encounter between Nell and her mother, Rochelle. Rochelle continued, "I don't know what happened to the house. Long time paid for. You be thinking on it, we?" Her newly darkened eyebrows queried Helene. "We," Helene's voice was chilly. "I be thinking on it." "Oh, well, not for me to say." Suddenly she swept around and hugged Nell, a quick embrace tighter and harder than one would have imagined her thin, soft arms capable of. Voir, voir, and she was gone. In the kitchen, being soaped head to toe by her mother, Nell ventured an observation. She smelled so nice, and her skin was so soft. Helene rinsed the cloth. Much-handled things are always soft. "What does voir mean?" "I don't know," her mother said. "I don't talk Creole, and neither do you." And so in this passage, you have Toni Morrison switching between multiple varieties. So Rochelle, who's the grandmother of Nell and the mother of Helene, speaks in a New Orleans Creole. And as Morrison represents that particular language variety, you see a couple different things. One is a distinct pattern in the way she is representing the pattern of sounds. So you have the house, where that D is replacing the TH sound in that sort of word initial position to sort of represent that pattern of sound. However, you also have patterns in the grammar being represented. So Rochelle uses the phrase, you be thinking on it. And that be thinking is what's called a habitual be. It's part of a verb aspect system that uses that invariant form to indicate an action that is habitual or happens all the time. Later in the conversation, you have her daughter Helene, who uses a different language variety. And she says, much handled things are always soft. And so she uses a more standard form of the verb adverb combination, are always soft. If she spoke in the same Creole variety as Rochelle, she would say, much handled things would be soft. And so here you have Morrison code switching in a similar way to other writers like Zora Neale Hurston in Their Eyes Were Watching God, using these multiple codes, even as the characters themselves aren't able to code switch and recognize that they're not. So Helene says, I don't talk Creole in the way her mother does. If she were, then Nell would be able, or Helene would be able to code switch between her own variety of English and her mother's Creole.
Wow, what a great passage! I'm most impressed with all of the aspects of language variety and differences in language that this illustrates. You talked about sound patterns. Probably there's some vocabulary patterns in there, and also grammar patterns. Those are the three levels. The three major levels among which we see differences in language varieties from region to region, from age group to age group. So what a great passage. Let me ask you a quick question about it. I majored in French in college, and while I don't speak Creole, I heard the word voir. Was that spelled V-O-I-R-E?
V-O-I-R. So in this passage, as you noted, it's New Orleans Creole, so it includes items from both English and French. And here is a shortening of au revoir, so saying goodbye. But also, voir means to see or to behold. And so there's also a subtext, as Morrison does. She's manipulating language to have it represent sort of multiple levels.
Wow. So we have different dialects, and the language varieties create the characters, and we also see vocabulary from the different languages coming in.
Yes.
Cool. Actually, I have a couple of things here. A passage that I use in my work from Toni Morrison. Again, she's so powerfully uses language to create character. And this is a short passage from her book, Love. And the characters are Bill Cozy, who is a landowner, and Sandler, who is a worker. So here we have a conversation. Sandler begins, "Then why ain't you smiling?" Bill Cozy turned to look at Sandler. His eyes, though bright from drink, radiated pain like cracked glass. "What do they say about me?" he asked, sipping from the thermos. "They? You all, you know, behind my back. You a highly respected man, Mr. Cozy." Okay, in this passage, we see Morrison similarly using quite a diversity of language structure of different varieties. And the varieties create character and narration. So Cozy, the landowner, speaks a form of spoken standard English, which is very different from written standard English. So he says, "What do they say about me?" And then what we see is him using very characteristic forms of spoken standard English, namely sentence fragments. He says, "You all, you know, behind my back." That's how spoken language goes. And one way I use this paragraph in talking with my students and with teachers is to point out that as our students in school often write in, use sentence fragments, and as teachers we want to transition them into using full-blown, full grammatical sentences in standard English, one thing we need to realize is that often our students are simply using the patterns of natural spoken language in their written product. And so part of our task is leading the students to transition from the patterns of spoken English to the patterns of written English. There's more that I could say about this paragraph, but I wanted to move on to writing a little bit, because in my work, one of the great focuses that I work with is helping students transition from the grammatical patterns that we've just seen inside Morrison's work, from the grammatical patterns in their that crop up in their school writing, to standard English. So, if I just step back a moment here, we admire the grammatical patterns and the voice, the human voice that just rings out in Toni Morrison's work. We applaud it. That's what makes her work brilliant among all the other writers that you've so aptly mentioned. At the same time, as writing teachers, and English teachers, when those very same patterns crop up in our students' writing in school, sometimes we feel dismayed and we see them as errors. And perhaps what we don't see is the human home voice coming through. Now, of course, we will want to transition the students to standard English, but let me just read an example of how these very same kinds of patterns find voice and crop up in school writing. I'm going to read a passage from a year-end NCLB test from an eighth grade student. I'm going to read two paragraphs here. First, imagine a day without no television to watch. It would be so boring. I would have to keep the light on. The bulb would be hot as fire. Since there no television, you would have to go to bed early. To keep yourself busy, you can do educational thing, such as reading books. Second, imagine a day without no television to watch. I wouldn't be able to watch my shows, such as Girlfriends, the episode where Tony takes Joni, ex-boyfriend, and bring him to Joni's birthday party. Okay, so we see the very same kinds of patterns Toni Morrison was using, transferring into this student's writing. And so we want to be able to both understand what we've got here and help students transition into standard English. And so code switching for me builds on top of responding to student writing. And what we'll see is that we will compare and contrast the grammar of the home to the grammar of the school, and then teach the students to code switch, to choose the language to fit the setting.
Well, I think that's a terrific point. I think that really gets us to how learning about code switching, learning how to more intentionally code switch and how to productively respond to students' writing can really help students and teachers alike. And I think the key point that I'd like to emphasize is that it helps us as teachers to access students' existing knowledge and to use that knowledge to develop students' facility with standard academic English. And if I can just relay a brief story, if I might, about my work in classrooms and how being more explicit and intentional about code switching can really change a classroom. I was working at a school in the Washington, D.C. area, and the teacher I was working with, all of her students were speakers of vernacular English, and to varying degrees, their vernacular grammatical patterns manifested in their students' writing. But the teacher had a little bit of background in code switching, but wasn't quite clear about what it was. And so when I asked her, when I first started working with her, if her students knew how to code switch, she said yes. And in looking at the students' writing, you could see that maybe that wasn't as transparently true as it was. And then in talking with the kids, they saw themselves as changing their language for school because they were not using the slang and the types of vocabulary items that they associated with sort of less formal settings, that they were changing it for school, but some of the grammatical patterns, like some of the things we're talking about in Morrison's writing, that were less transparent to those students, that they weren't as conscious about because they're so much a part of their speech. It's just a fundamental part of their grammar, that those were still showing up in their writing. And so then the teacher became very frustrated with the students' writing. And then when I started working with them about code switching and being more sort of explicit about some of the grammatical patterns that they were using, and then the grammatical patterns that the teacher was expecting, and then being able to more intentionally move back and forth, it gave the students a much clearer idea about the teacher's expectations, and it gave the teacher a much more productive way to respond to her students' writing beyond just seeing these grammatical features as error, which is not to say that the novice writers don't make errors in their writing, because of course they do, but this is about looking at grammatical patterns.
That's so interesting that the kids were aware of needing to switch, and they were trying to switch, but what they saw and what the kids focused on was vocabulary. So they were effectively successful at code switching vocabulary, but then the kids did not know that, okay, the grammar patterns have to also switch from vernacular to standard. That makes perfectly good sense if you think about the nature of language. Language is a vastly unconscious capacity and knowledge we all have. It's unconscious. Nobody told us, nobody taught us the most detailed grammar rules. So for example, when you take the sentence, I'm gonna go to South Carolina. I'm gonna go to the store. That's a pattern that works fine, where you reduce the going to. But we never say, I'm gonna to the back porch. Well, why? The reason is gonna only contracts down when there is a verb following it, when the to goes with a verb, the infinitive plus verb, gonna go to go to. It does not contract down when there's a prepositional phrase following it, gonna the back porch. But nobody ever instructed us, oh, by the way, child, don't use gonna when it's followed by a prepositional phrase. We just induce language patterns. That's what it is to inquire language, inductive logic, unconscious. And so, of course, the students wouldn't know necessarily to transition the grammar. And that's that's part of the mission or the goal or the magic about the technique of using contrastive analysis and code switching to teach the transition from vernacular to standard and standard to vernacular if you're producing narrative. So this is sort of what I'd like to describe is what's the next step? Now that we know that students come to us with a community language of sound, vocabulary, and grammar, how can we help add another tool to their linguistic toolkit, or how can we help add another variety to their linguistic repertoire? I mentioned contrastive analysis. It's, again, a technique originally from second language acquisition where you can compare and contrast the patterns of two different languages. Used to be used to predict whether a person would have difficulty with a new language, but we don't use it that way. We just use it to observe the differences between the structures. Let me give you an example. I'll talk about possession. And in the eighth grade writing I mentioned earlier, we saw several examples of vernacular possessive patterns. Joni ex-boyfriend, Joni birthday party. Okay, this is the student following the grammar patterns of their community English. So how can we build on that? Well, in my book, my National Council of Teachers of English book, Teaching Standard English in Urban Classrooms, Code Switching, which is sort of the basis that I'll be extending into lessons with Heinemann. The core graphic organizer we use is a code switching chart. It's a T chart, so you have two columns, a column on the left and a column on the right. We assemble the data from student language, say a bunch of examples, maybe five or six examples of these possessive patterns. So I might have Tony takes Joni ex-boyfriend, brings him to Joni birthday party, five or six like that under the vernacular column on the left. Then we translate them into the standard English or the academic edited English on the right under the formal or standard column. What in the classroom, the teacher builds and presents mini lessons and leads the students to discover the grammar pattern of the language they're speaking. They read through the informal sentences and the teacher says, how do we know that Joni has an ex-boyfriend? How do we know that there's a relationship here, that there's an ownership? And the kids read through and reason through the sentences and discover, it's active discovery learning of grammar, discover that the vernacular pattern is owner plus owned. So when the student writes Joni birthday party, they're following the grammatical pattern for possession in the community language. The teacher then uses comparison and contrast, Marzano's number one most successful strategy, applies it to grammar, and they discover the grammar pattern for the standard English. So we've now brought the unconscious language knowledge to the conscious level as the kids actively engaged in discovering these patterns. Okay, what do we do now? Well, of course, in our forthcoming Heinemann book, there are lessons that follow up on this, that show you how to do this and follow up. But these charts stay up on the classroom wall for children and students to use during the editing process. After, at the very end of the writing process, in formal essays, to be able to transition from vernacular to standard.
Yeah, and I use that same graphic organizer in my book as well, that the T-chart or the code switching chart, and follow very much sort of a similar protocol where you have students look at examples. The examples in my book are all drawn from literature, from interviews with famous people, and so examples that I've found sort of out in the world, and then have students look at these various patterns and then practice manipulating the patterns and ultimately induce a rule based upon the data that they've been working with. And so one example that I have students work with is what's called a zero copula. And all that means is that in some varieties of English, in particular grammatical environments, what we call a linking verb, or usually the verb to be, does not necessarily have to stand between a subject and an adjective, sometimes between a subject and a noun, and sometimes between a subject and a progressive verb. And this is only works in the present tense. So in a vernacular variety of English, you have something like this, a quotation from "Their Eyes Were Watching God," "You mean you mad because she didn't stop and tell us her business." So in the standard, that would be, "You are mad." And you would insert that verb, the verb to be. And then so you have students look at examples. So another one from "The Bluest Eye," "I don't know, he hears somewhere," or from "A Raisin in the Sun," "No, she just tired." But then this is very much rule governed, and this is partly evidenced by, in the first person, that verb has to be there both in the vernacular and the standard. So in "A Raisin in the Sun," you see, "I'm just sleepy as the devil." And so using this chart, we'll have students look at examples and then manipulate those examples, and at the bottom, induce a rule. So in some vernacular varieties of English, a subject and a predicative adjective in the present tense are linked by. And in this case, for this particular variety of English, they don't have to be linked by anything, with the exception of the first person. And in standard English, subject and predicative adjective in the present tense are linked by the verb to be. And so you have the students be able to induce the rule. And so then that makes students, really increases their metalinguistic awareness and their sense of the rule governedness and the systematicity of all language varieties, both vernacular varieties as well as the sense that the academic English they're asked to manipulate in school is also rule governed, and then it can help students switch. So when you have a passage that a student was writing about a poem, and the student wrote, "She crying out loud trying to save her children." So there is a place where the student might be prompted then to code switch and write, you know, she is crying out loud, and insert that verb to be.
As you talk about the rule-governed nature that that in the copula absence, or the, I call it, be understood, the students are following very structured patterns. All too often in society, people tend to think that, these students are just making mistakes, they're lazy, they can't bother to, you know, learn English properly. And what I have found what I think is the most significant part of my work with code switching is that I find a transformation takes place both in the student who realizes, wow, I know a lot. I come to school knowing and with knowledge and with capacity, and I have a voice. And just as importantly, I see teacher transformation. Over and over and over again, teachers tell me that before they encountered code switching, all they saw was what they thought were grammar errors. And they couldn't get past that. They just red pen the paper. Paper would be covered with red marks. And they felt so discouraged, they didn't know what to do. And they just backed off. They saw nothing beyond the grammar. And after talking about the rules and the patterns and in just the way you have described, teachers have said to me, you know, this has just changed how I understand my children. She says, no longer do I just see grammar. I understand it's the language of the home, and we now have some techniques to offer them more linguistic, to broaden their linguistic repertoire. But now they're not blinded by grammar. I've had teachers say, now I can see the whole child. Now I can see their voice. Now I can see their broad capacity as a writer. I can reach in and respond to them as a writer. It just gives me goosebumps to hear that. I just, whew, that's sort of what it's all about.
That then, I think, brings us to our final question, which is, can teachers without any specific technical knowledge teach it?
Yeah, good question. You know, sometimes when I'm talking with groups of teachers, I will have shared all of this information and all of these how-tos and approaches, and I'll pause and think, you know, surely they're wondering, Cully, do I know enough to do that? And what I encourage people with is, yes, you actually do know enough to engage in the kind of code switching and contrastive analysis that David and I have talked about. Now, how can that be? Because not many people have degrees in linguistics. Do you need a degree in linguistics to do this? No. All you need is a sense of difference. So, in particular, what I mean is, as a teacher is reading along in their students' writing, often we have a sense of, oh, they're making an error here. You know, they've left off the ED on to show past time, or the students have left off the S to show plurality, and I have two dog and two cat. So that sense of error is your key as a teacher. And what I ask teachers to do is to suspend their disbelief or to step back in that moment and go, ah, maybe what I feel is an error instead is a pattern inside a different language variety, and that's all you need. Then what you start doing is collecting examples of similar patterns. And so all of the code switching charts that are available in my book from NCTE, Code Switching, Teaching Standard English in Urban Classrooms, and will be available in my Heinemann 2010 publication. All of the charts that we build come directly from student writing and from teachers just selecting the examples that at first sound like an error, but upon reflection, teachers realize, ah, it's a pattern. And once you collect those examples, you've got your data to be able to build the full code switching chart to lead your students in contrastive analysis. So that's how I approach it. What do you do, David?
I would agree 100% that my book actually grew out of a project that I worked on with a teacher who had no specific technical knowledge. And although there are certainly challenges, she was enormously successful in implementing the kinds of strategies we've been talking about. And that's really also been a primary goal of my book, was to present the sort of linguistic information, the kind that we've been talking about, in a way that is really accessible for teachers without any technical knowledge. It's really the audience that I was aiming for. And ultimately, for me, the goal is exactly what you've been talking about. It's not to necessarily implement the specific kind of example lessons that I have in my book, but to give teachers and students a kind of sensitivity to these grammatical patterns, and then to encourage teachers to go out and develop materials and lessons based upon their own students and their interactions and observations with their own students, and to create lessons that make sense for their own classroom. And that ultimately, I think, is the goal for me. But this has been a wonderful conversation.
Absolutely. Absolutely. Great talking to you.
You too.